Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Stories to make you shiver. Volume 1, Story 1. I've had Jack Russell dogs for at least a decade. I have other dogs too, but those Jacks are afraid of nothing. They're bred to chase a fox into a den and bring it out. Jacks are a fraction of the size of my fox. My oldest male has taken on pit bulls. He kills cats with glee. He takes on skunks and cows, and he has the scars and limps to prove it. I can't believe he is still alive. I've seen him running around after fighting with my Newfoundland, but he's so pumped up he doesn't notice half the flesh on his chest hanging out in a big bleeding triangle. Bones visible, gore everywhere. He is a tough, fearless bastard who just doesn't quit. He's never bitten or so much as growled at a person, but he is a relentless hunter. Amusingly enough, his name is Putt-Putt, maybe because he never stops moving. That's what happens when a 3-year-old girl names a dog. One night, the Jacks were outside and started to bark like crazy. I went outside with a flashlight to see what was going on. My land at the time had some woods, some yard, and a bunch of brush, snowberry and thorny rose. There were big patches of brush throughout the yard. I live in northwest Montana, where if you go out at night, you might see something dark flash by at the corner of your eye and not really notice. Then suddenly you think, wait, was that a bear? And turn and freeze too late and stare blindly and helplessly into the dark. It was one of those moonless nights when you can't see anything except what is right in your flashlight beam. The dogs were surrounding a big area of brush and barking like crazy. It was a big brush area with a small tree in the center. Anything could be hiding in there. There was no movement or sound from the brush. At first, I was curious and started towards the brush to see if I could scare out whatever animal was in there, chase it off. Then me and the dogs could get in the house and go to bed. The possum or whatever it was would live another day, and my dogs would have a good chase, and then we would all get some sleep. Then I noticed that even Putt-Putt wouldn't go in to chase out whatever was in there. I stopped where I was, goosebumps up my arms. I realized I did not want to know what was in there. If Putt-Putt wouldn't go in there and chase it out, I definitely did not want to find out what it was. That dog would fight to the death, and he was fearless. I had no doubt that whatever creature was in the brush, hiding and scared or pissed off, could rip my guts out. I backed away, yelling at the dogs to come with me. I backed away all the way to the house, shouting with my flashlight fixed on that brush the whole time, and got us all in the house. I did not go outside again that night. The dogs were jittery till morning. I never went outside at night without a gun after that. This happened about 10 years ago. My wife and I went on date night out at the Saugatuck Dunes. It's a small walk out to Lake Michigan, less than a mile through some hardwood forests and pines. We walked out in the early evening, watched the sunset over the lake, talked, then walked back in the dark. I had my full star pack, so we had flashlights and glow sticks for the walk back. I kept telling her about the urban legends of the Felt Mansion and the melon hens out there. Nothing too eventful on the walk back, other than hearing a coyote, until we got to the parking lot. We were out way past dark, and there were only 2 cars in the lot when we came out of the woods. None had lights on, none were running, and neither had any lights on in the interior. As we walked past a white SUV, my wife whispered, "I think there's a person in there." I did a quick shine into the vehicle, and there was a woman sitting in the driver's seat. She had both hands on the wheel and was just looking forward. No reaction from her when I shined her with my light, which is pretty bright. She just stared forward. She looked kind of like Data from Star Trek, too. I had one of those instances where I totally was not expecting someone to be there. It creeped me out a little. We hurried over to my car. My wife got in, took the keys, and locked the doors. Well, I put my pack away in the trunk. We were both unconditioned orange. The white SUV started up and drove away as I put my stuff away. I planned on going over there after I put my stuff away with my bigger mag light to see if she was okay. Who knows? Maybe we stopped her from doing something terrible that night. Next story. This happened back in November of 2007. It was a cool and clear night. Me and a friend were out of the lake that you had to do some off-roading to get to. We were out in the cove and there were a few other groups out there having a good time. The sound of the lake and the smell of a campfire filled the air. It was just a relaxing night away from the city. Well, until a guy started screaming, "Chris, Chris, you have 3 effing minutes to get in the truck." You kind of have to take notice of stuff like this. A few of us bet that he was drunk and it's nothing more than an argument. The guy loads up his stuff and leaves. About 5 minutes later, he returns, honking his horn and yelling for Chris. We don't know who Chris is or if Chris is even real. None of us have seen anyone else at his campfire. The guy in the truck shuts off his lights, turns off the truck and sits there for about 30 minutes or so, then gets out and starts screaming again. "Chris, here's your effing bag. Don't ever call me again." He tosses a bag out of the truck and drives off. We're standing around laughing that this guy's just drunk and a little crazy. Not even 5 minutes pass when here comes the truck and the guy screaming for Chris. He drives over to the bag, gets out, looks around, screams for Chris, picks up the bag and makes his way over to our fire, asking one of the kids at our fire if he had seen a girl, a dog, and a bag. The kid asks, "What does she look like?" The guy snaps, "What the F does that matter? Have you seen her or you haven't?" Drunk guy gets back in his truck and drives off again. Okay, so now we know Chris is a girl. None of us have seen this girl, even heard her speak at any point. By this time, we figure the guy killed this girl either at home or at the lake and is now trying to make it look like she walked off on her own. Or he's just insane and is going to come back and kill all of us. A few of us head over to where the guy was parked and where he tossed the bag to look and see if this mystery girl was around and just hiding from the drunk guy. We can't find anything, not even the girl's footprints. One of the guys finally says what we're all thinking. "Dude, there is a dead girl out here somewhere." About that time, we load up the Jeep and take another way out. I wanted to see if the girl had walked out another way. As we make it to the top of a hill, there's this blood-curdling scream that pierces the night. "Chris?" We shut off the Jeep and listened. Then we hear it again. Kids from the other party. "Lady, hey lady, lady." Flashlights are out searching the hills. We wait, but there's no response. We drive on. As we made our way to the road, we see the drunk guy in his Ford and he's making tracks. There's only a few ways out of the cove, so we follow at a distance. The Ford stops. The guy gets out. It looks like he may be peeing, but we're not sure. He hops back in the truck and takes off. We don't wait around to see where he's going. As we headed over another hill that would put us in the wash back to the main road, the Ford pulls in behind us and he's moving fast. I tell my buddy to make sure he's strapped in and to hold on. We don't slow down as we drop down the side of the hill to wash. We never saw the girl, the bag, or the dog this guy was talking about. Was she real? Was she just out there hiding? Did he kill her and make it look like she walked off alone? That's just one of those Friday nights that make for a good story around the fire 5 years later. Next story. I grew up on a sheep station in Central Australia before lambing season and I was allowed to go hunting on my own. I would have been about 12 or 13. I'd spend 3 or 4 days on horseback around the property shooting foxes and rabbits mostly. I can't remember how big the property was, but was told once standing on the back veranda, if you looked that direction, we owned it as far as you could see. On the back side of the property, where we didn't run much stock, there was a very old house. I have no idea how old it was, but it dated back a few years to the early settlers. As I was hunting in my usual places with no luck, I headed over to the back paddocks for a few days. I'd camp on my own, whistle up a few foxes here and there. The last night, I decided to camp near this old house. Never really thought about it. Late at night, while trying to sleep, I would hear a young girl crying. Now, this is in the middle of nowhere. The nearest town is about 2 or 3 days' drive away. Very arid, flat, dry sort of country. The house was just 4 walls, really no roof, but there was an old swing there. Wooden frame, straight pieces of iron, no chains and no seat. Really just a frame and 2 pieces of iron bar hanging off of it. After ignoring the crying, thinking I was dreaming or something, I eventually got to sleep. Upon returning home, after bagging 10 or so foxes, I told my uncle about the crying girl. A strange sort of smile came over his face, and he told me the story that many years ago a family lived there, and a girl had been kidnapped and murdered by the local Aborigines. He wasn't sure if it might have been some type of retribution thing. Anyway, I still went hunting out there on occasion, taking the story with a big grain of salt. But every time I would pass the swing, either in a vehicle, horseback, or on foot, the two iron poles would start swinging as if someone was on that swing. Next story. It was around 1998, 1999. I was 17 or 18 at the time. The town I lived in was kind of a huge gradual U-shape. You could drive out the north end of town, make a few turns, take a few gravel roads, and after a little while, you'd pop back into the south end of the town. It was cool because you'd lose your sense of direction while out in the back roads, and we'd often use that little trick with girls just to see their reaction. Plus, it was more fun than running the main drag from Walmart to Taco Bell like everyone else did. Anyway, it was a late summer, early fall, around 11 p.m., a friend and I were out on these back roads with a couple of girlfriends. The highway ran way out into the boonies where you could turn into a gravel road. I was driving when the windows rolled down, and as we turned off the highway, we noticed a young woman standing on the left side of the road. She was holding a small child, and they both seemed completely unaware that we were even there. I was slowing as I was turning, and she was literally 6 feet outside my open window. She wasn't looking up or anything, just seemed to be in a trance, like staring off into space. My first thought as we passed was to stop and see if she needed help, but I got that familiar cold shiver with a feeling of dread, and I didn't even want to look directly at her. We all got silent and just kept going, sort of slow, like you would cruising a gravel road anyway. There was a left turn about 50 yards, and as we went around, I asked, "Did you guys see her?" We all had, and everyone was kind of spooked, but as the weird feeling subsided, my mind went back to thinking maybe she needed help. However, for some reason, instead of turning around, I just made the loop back through town, then back out to the location, which took about 30 or 45 minutes. And when we got there, she wasn't there. We stopped and even went on down the highway a bit to look for her, but never saw anything. And we never at any point before or after saw a broken down car on the side of the road or anything. Now, today I'm extremely skeptical and generally don't believe in anything paranormal, supernatural, spiritual, etc. And in hindsight, it was probably just a real person, but at that time, it was pretty creepy and it gives me chills to describe it again. Next story. I have two stories. They're about the most I've been scared. Both were in Afghanistan. One was late 2011, Helmand Province, Afghanistan. I was standing post on a small 8-man patrol base at about 2 in the morning. The post consisted of 4 plywood walls, bulletproof glass, and sandbags. I'd been up for about 24 hours at this point and was starting to hallucinate and mildly seeing school buses and the like. All of a sudden, bang. First thought was a round hitting the bulletproof glass. Realized about a second later that it was a rock. Immediately on high alert, adrenaline flowing, I scanned the area with many thermals and got no heat signatures from anywhere. The strange part was that we had double-stacked razor wire about 30 meters out from the post, and it was all open ground for about 30 meters past that, so any rock throw would have had to have been amazing. I called up the command center and had them use a big thermal camera on a stick to scan the area in case I missed something. They got nothing. At this point, I'm kind of freaking out, thinking there's someone out there that I can't see, but they can see me. 10 or 15 minutes go by, and I'm starting to relax a little, maybe thinking a bird flew into the glass or something like that. All of a sudden, bang. Again, this time it sounded 2 times louder. I got this feeling of pure terror and felt adrenaline flush through my body. Got my rifle at the ready, laser on, looking harder than I've ever looked before at every piece of micro-terrain that a human could be hiding behind and cannot see anything. I'm freaked and still don't know to this day what it was, but it scared the crap out of me. Second story. This was early 2012, still in Helmand, but a different, bigger patrol base. 13 men, Afghan National Army platoon. It was right around midnight on post. This patrol base had gravel lining the whole grounds to keep dust down. It was a poorly built defensive position with blind spots everywhere. I was 6 hours into an 8-hour shift when I heard some gravel crunching just below my post, which was about 10 feet back inside the wire. A blind spot. Very unusual because we had early AM patrol and everyone but myself, the other post stander, and the one guy on radio watch in the command center was definitely sleeping. I called out, "Who's that?" And the crunching stops, and I get no response. I use my radio to call the command center and ask if he was walking around. He tells me no. I ask him to come out and check this out. I made sure to tell him to be careful coming around the corner, to have him keep his rifle up, weapon light on, and pop the corner. As I see him walking, the gravel crunching sound picks up again, but this time rapidly, like someone's running. Once again, high alert, adrenaline flowing, hardcore. I'm thinking we've got someone inside the wire. So I start yelling, "Stop or I'll shoot," in Pashto, which is Afghan. The sound stops and my radio watch pops, the corner ready to shoot, and nothing. There's nothing there. So once again, I'm freaked out. He chalks it up to me being paranoid and lack of sleep, but I'm not so sure. About an hour later, it happens again, almost exactly the same way with nothing being there. I had the radio watch wake up my buddy, and he stood at post with me for the last hour, which passed without incident. I still have no clue what it was. A kid inside the wire somehow? A cat? A dog? A ghost? Who knows? All I know is I've never been more scared than in those two instances. Next story. This was in the early 80s. I had bought a three-wheeler. I lived in a condo with a gravel pit across the street that I would ride and practice riding in. If you have ever ridden one, it takes some getting used to. I was out riding one day. My best friend showed up and told me the police and fire were fishing a body out of the river. The river was less than 200 yards from my condo. At the time, I had a blue Ford pickup with a white canopy on it. Right now, you might be asking yourself, how is this relevant to this story? Just bear with me. You will see the relevance. Continuing on, we drove my pickup down there to watch and see what was going on. Didn't see much and left. Along that section of the river, they found 5 or 6 bodies. I did a lot of riding with that three-wheeler in a lot of different places. At one spot, a friend of mine had his and I had mine. We were at a different gravel pit riding all afternoon. When it was time to leave, right about dusk, we loaded up the wheelers in my Ford pickup and we couldn't find his dog. Well, after dark, the dog showed up. The dog really stunk like it had been rolling in something. We thought he found a dead animal. 1 week later, they found a body there. There was another place we were riding and I told a friend of mine that I wouldn't be surprised if they found some bodies here. Within a month, 5 bodies were found across the street from that place we were riding in. By the way, same blue Ford pickup, white canopy. By now, of course, there was a lot of press and attention to these bodies being found, and you've probably guessed that the river at the start of this story, the river is the Green River. About the time frame, they started calling the murderer the Green River Killer. I was visiting my parents one day. After leaving, I drove down to the highway, looked across the street, and in front of my grade school, there were police all over the road. I drove over and saw coroners, detectives, and uniforms all combing a small wooded area. This was 11 blocks from where I grew up. 5 more bodies were found. Again, same blue Ford pickup. Fast forward about 15 years. I'm reading a book about the Green River Killer, and in one of the chapters, they spoke of a blue Ford pickup with a white canopy that was a suspect vehicle. I was reading this book before they caught Gary Ridgway. Damn near fell out of my chair. Gary Ridgway went to my high school. I never knew him. He's 4 years older than I am. He was caught about 5 years after I read that book. He was found guilty of 49 murders and admitted to twice that. He was sentenced to 49 life sentences. Next story. This happened back in 2013. We went camping and arrived at the site around noon. A nice river spot just down a little hill from the cars. Upon arriving, we walked to the site, gathered scrap wood, and made a pile for the coming darkness, which was a few hours away. We then began to set up our tents and the rest of the equipment, making sure all the usable pieces of wood in the immediate area were clear and ready to be used. After that, we went on a little hike and made it back to camp just about 20 minutes after the last light of dusk had touched the valley. With headlamps down, we got a fire going in the wet and somewhat snowy campsite. As you could imagine, the wood was soaked through on most parts, and it took some minor ingenuity to get the fire going to the small roar needed to stay warm and to get the stew cooking in the Dutch oven. After a hearty meal and a few drinks, we settled in, simply enjoying the light of the fire and the company that the four of us could provide. As the wood supply dwindled, we would periodically comb the nearby area to keep the fire ablaze. Came to such a point where most of the nearby wood had to be picked clean, and the four of us and the dogs had to set out and venture up the little hill and into the small clearing where the cars were parked. We pulled a small tree that was embedded into a small hill with one of the trucks and got to work sawing it for rounds. After that, as a group, we carried the rounds down to the site and made a small pile next to the fire. Upon our return to the campsite, there was a 5-foot cross stuck in the ground and held together with duct tape. This was not here before and couldn't have been done by any of us since we were all together up the hill. Also, the site is fairly remote and is not part of any campground, but rather a solitary site at least 5 miles from the next nearest place to camp. This kind of freaked us all out a bit, and we decided to split into two armed groups and walk the river's edge, as that was the only possible path that could be taken. Me and a buddy armed with a shotgun and a pistol headed up what was the most obvious path and found some fresh boot tracks in the scattered and melting snow, but were tough to keep track of due to heavy leaf cover and the snow only being every so often. About 75 or 100 yards from the site, we found a large underground cave or den that had been dug out from the earth with signs of movement in the sandy bottom of this hole. There was large sweeping tracks, but not paw prints or claw marks of any kind. We did not know what to make of this, and after stopping for a bit, decided to go on just a bit further. I swear I kept hearing movements in the brush up the hill from the elevated river trails, but rivers can be loud and sound lost in their shiftless flow. Still not sure if it was sound coming off of the river and echoing from the hillside, or if the thumping I heard was movement on hollow ground that dotted the area, as I saw the headlamps off in the distance of the other party begin to fade, we decided we should head back as not to be too spread out or lose our route back, as by this time the path had faded into a series of what looked like game trails. When we got back to camp, where the other party had returned from a short and uneventful search, we all still had an odd feeling hanging over us, but settled back down into the circle around the fire to warm up again. But for some reason, the dogs, who were normally laid back and explored around our campsite, had positioned themselves at our backs and were staring off into the darkness intently. I checked what they were looking at a few different times to see what they were looking at or seemed to be anticipating, but every time nothing was there. One went so far as to walk around the site and mark the perimeter and come back to me looking for help. I walked up the hill to have a look with a dog close on my heels, which is odd because he's always up front. After being creeped out for a couple of hours, decided to throw a few more back and forget the whole thing and let someone come if they may. Went to sleep that night around 2 with a .45 and two dogs in my bed. One of us stayed up until just before daybreak, enjoying himself, tending to the fire and imbibing what was left of the whiskey. Nothing ever came of this, but was odd and an unnerving experience to come back to your site and find a 5-foot cross planted in the ground. Guess we will never know where it came from. Next story. Where I live, which is just outside the heart of the Catskills, there's a forest called Lundy State Forest, which is part of the Catskills. This forest is known by many locals to be haunted. It all starts on a road off of Route 209. The road is respectively called Lundy Estate Road. There's a few active houses at the beginning of the road, but after a half mile, the road just goes on and on. This place has a huge fan base because a few miles up Lundy Road, there's an abandoned stone house. This house is famous for being haunted, and it sure looks haunted. There's plenty of legends about this road, and this house in particular. According to legend, the family lived in the stone house until the father murdered his family in the house. To this day, there's signs of witchcraft and Satanism rituals being performed in the house. The road itself leads to an abandoned village called Pottersville. There's a popular legend surrounding this ghost town. Apparently, There were a string of unsolved murders occurring in the town. Residents from a nearby town, Ellenville, found out and sent a task force up to Pottersville. They killed everyone and razed the town. They eventually found out that it was a drifter who was responsible for the unsolved murders. I've spent a lot of time exploring the abandoned house in Pottersville. I've personally had a few weird things happen, and I'm a skeptic. First, I went camping up there one time. It was just me and a good friend, and we were about a mile from the car and another 6 or more miles from the nearest house. We set up camp and tried to catch some Z's, but we couldn't. All night we heard what sounded like a dozen people walking around and inside our campsite. Every time we thought we heard someone inside our campsite, we would shine our flashlights around. It was weird because we didn't see a single thing, not even eyes reflecting. Second, somewhere on this road there's a parking spot for one car. So I parked my car and me and two friends got out. We were walking down the road when we saw a pair of headlights coming in our direction. My friends ran back to the car. I jumped off the side of the road over an embankment. The headlights somehow disappeared. They didn't go by us, and there's also no place for a car to turn around. So where did they go? Thirdly, I decided to show a few friends the abandoned house one night. We were on our way back when we went around a turn. I see something large and white, bigger than a deer, cross the road. It was just within range of my headlights. One of my passengers said she saw the same thing. There's a state-operated public shooting range on this property that I use. I get to meet a lot of the locals, so they tell me stories that they've heard. A popular story I'm told is there's a mafia house up or some other group near Pottersville. A few people have told me about friends or family who were hiking near Pottersville, only to be approached by men in suits who are heavily armed. They tell them to vacate the area. Weird, I know, but very interesting at the same time. Next story. Many years ago, during my early teens, my clan had headed into the north central mountains of Pennsylvania for the annual buck season. Most of us had never hunted this area, but my dad and his brother, my uncle, had hunted here many years before, just one time. We had decided the night before opening day that we would hunt a remote area that required a hike of about 2.5 miles back on an old logging trail. Using topographical maps, everyone had decided that they would go once we reached the end of the trail. My uncle and his son were headed up into a saddle slightly to the right in the head of the trail end, while my other uncle and his two sons would spread out below the ridge on the right. My dad was headed to the left of the saddle, and my younger brother was headed to the left of the trail into a shallow hollow. I had chosen to head for a bog between my brother and dad. When I had chosen that area the night before, I had noticed a glance between my dad and uncle, and I promised them that I would only skirt the edge. I knew better than to wander into a northern bog. Even a small bog like this one, approximately 80 yards by 100 yards, was dangerous. We headed out after a hearty breakfast and hit the road, the logging road, about half an hour or so before dawn. As we wished each other luck and split up, my dad looked at me sternly and said, "Be careful in there, boy." I assured him that I would and headed for the bog. It was a dreary, misty morning with temps hovering just above freezing. The ground was wet, so moving through the forest was especially quiet. I figured I would angle in and hit the bog's edge at about midpoint, and then still hunt the edge until I hit the midpoint on the other side. On the way in, as the woods slowly lit up with an overcast dawn, I slipped past a pair of squirrels, heard a woodpecker up on the ridge, and had spotted a few chickadees. A blue jay spotted me, however, and sounded the alarm, which really upset me. It was a typical morning in the woods. As I approached the edge of the bog, nature called, or more accurately, the heavy breakfast called. Reluctantly but hurriedly, I dug a small hole at the base of a huge hemlock, dropped rawr, and proceeded to fertilize the tree. As I squatted there, I realized that something had changed. Not only had the blue jay disappeared, but it seemed like everything else had too. There wasn't a sound anywhere, and I had the unshakable feeling that I was being watched. My rather exposed and vulnerable condition, I tried to make myself smaller, while at the same time scanning the woods around me and straining to hear the slightest rustle or twig snap. I fully expected to see one of two things, either a deer standing behind me or my brother or dad slipping between the trees trying to pull a practical joke on me. There was no one to be seen or heard. Nothing. All of my focus had been behind me and to either side, not ahead into the bog. No one in their right mind would be in there. But as I shifted my position slightly, I glanced straight into that desolate-looking bog. There, next to a deadfall approximately 30 to 35 yards out in the bog and staring right at me, was what appeared to be the torso and head of a man. The rest was hidden behind brush and down trees between him and me. That alone would have been weird enough. What really shook me was his garb. He had a metal breastplate and what looked like a conquistador helmet on his head. My first thought was, okay, you're hallucinating. Your eyes are playing tricks on you. I shifted position again and quickly finished my business, filled the hole with dirt, and stepped behind the tree. The whole time, that being watched feeling never left, but I avoided looking back into the bog. As I settled myself down, I began to work my way along the bog's edge, but slightly faster than I normally still hunt. The woods remained eerily still, and that feeling just wouldn't go away. After I had gone about 30 yards, I ventured another look into the bog. As I scanned through, I slowly looked back to where I had thought I had seen the man. I easily picked out the deadfall, and sure enough, there slightly to the left of it was a conquistador again. But he had shifted and was still staring right at me. This time I had the presence of mind to use my rifle scope to get a better look. When the optics rested on where he should have been, there was nothing but a small dead bush back at the end of the deadfall. When I lowered the scope, there he was, and the bush was obscured. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and my hands went all clammy on me. I freaked. I made a beeline for the far end of the bog. There, just off the edge, was a small rise, which I crested. It gave me a good view down into the dead standing and fallen trees that littered the bog. I shifted around until I could pick out the deadfall again. There beside it was the man, and now I could see that he was holding something long in his hand, but I couldn't make out the details. He was still staring directly at me, having shifted yet again. At that moment, a small break in the clouds allowed the sun to shine through for a brief moment, and as it hit the area of the deadfall, it glinted brightly off the metal breastplate and the helmet, and then it was gone. It just vanished. The clouds closed up again, but he was nowhere to be seen. I left the bog and headed up the mountain to find my dad. He wasn't real happy with me showing up so early, but when I told him what had happened, he stared me in the eyes for a few seconds, then said, "Bogs can be strange places, boy." He never mentioned it again, but I have no doubt that the reason he and my uncle had not come back here in so long was because of that bog. I retold the story to the rest of the group later that night at the old hotel in which we were staying. No one laughed. The next day and for the rest of the trip, we hunted a different area. We never went back there.